Welcome back to the last hour of Shattering Myths. My name's Larry. I'm standing in here for, sitting in here for Yada. And Scott, who typically produces the show, he is co-hosting today. And we're talking about a person that Yahweh wrote about. And this is one of the most stunning prophecies of all time, as far as I'm concerned. And this was in Chabuk, which means embrace this. And these are Dead Sea Scrolls translations. By the way, that makes them extant, and it makes them the oldest on the planet. Next closest thing you're going to find is probably going to be the 11th century Masoretic vocalized text, which is not as accurate, obviously. It's probably 1,300 years newer. Anyway, Yahweh goes on. He's talking about a guy who's going to be present during the fulfillment of the Moed Mikra, which is what Yahusha did. Now, this next line, he says, pay attention. Pay attention. He will be puffed up with false pride. He is not right or straightforward. So through trust and reliance, those who are upright and vindicated shall live. So there's nothing right or straightforward in this guy. Now, we have Papyrus 72, where Shimon, and that means he listens, that has been basically corrupted to Peter, which has no meaning at all as far as I can tell. Shimon had wrote about Paul's letters, and what he said is he talks in circles using circular reasoning. And isn't this funny? Because Yahweh said he's puffed up and full of false pride. His soul is not right or straightforward in him. So through trust and reliance, those who are upright and vindicated shall live. In other words, you know, pay attention. Go ahead and live, and don't follow this guy full of false pride. You wouldn't want to follow somebody with false pride or who is puffed up or who is not straightforward. Wouldn't that be true? Those would be pretty bad instructions from Yahweh, wouldn't they?
Horrible.
Yeah. So he's not saying to follow this guy. He's saying pay attention so you'll live. Now he goes on and he says, moreover, because the intoxicating spirit of the man of deceptive infidelity and treacherous betrayal is a high-minded moral failure. So he will not rest, he will not find peace, nor will he live. Whoever is open to the broad path associated with Sheol. So, if you want to live, you know, if you want to find rest, and if you want to find peace, you're not going to be open to the broad path associated with Sheol. Now, there's only so many broad paths that have misled people, you know, that would be considered anything significant enough that Yahweh would take his time to write this letter to expose him. There's only been a few. But Christianity is certainly one of them, and Paul is without a doubt, no matter what church or circus you go to, he is the most quoted, isn't he? You ever been in a church, Scott?
Far more times than I'd like to admit.
And who do they generally quote the most often? Who do they study in their Sunday school lessons?
Jesus a lot, and then Paul. Paul's a big one.
Paul is the most quoted that I ever saw in any of the churches, and typically the study material was Romans.
Yeah.
Acts.
Corinthians.
You know, when you say Acts, you might as well be saying Paul, because Luke wasn't anywhere. Luke only knew what Paul told him. He was just Paul's historian. you know. Now, if you look at the Masoretic text, the 11th century Masoretic text, instead of saying associated with Sheol, it says Sheol, as in a place. But I would ask anybody to stop back and just open their mind here. We're talking about a he. And we're talking about an intoxicating spirit that he puts out there, and treacherous betrayal. Now, Sheol is a place. It doesn't have an intoxicating spirit. It's lifeless. I mean, there's just no spirit at all in there, other than, you know, people that are dead. And it's not a he. Sheol is not a he. And it's not a man. It says the intoxicating spirit of the man of deceptive infidelity and treacherous betrayal. He is a high minded moral failure, and he won't find rest. And he's just and neither will anybody else who's associated with this broad path that Sheol has laid out. It's not Sheol, as the MT says. Somebody wasn't thinking there, and they transcribe that as Sheol. But it's a he, and Sheol is not a he. And it says in the very next line, just to prove my point again, he and his soul are like the plague of death. Now, you couldn't say that about Sheol, which is a place, could you? It's not a he. And it's not his soul. There could be he's, she's, you know, any number of different souls in Sheol. So we know we're talking about a person, and that's Sheol, and it's written right there. And so those who are brought together by receiving him cannot be satisfied. Now, it's going to tell us something else here about this guy who's running around, and he's creating this new plan, because remember, Yahweh said he's going to stand on the same plan he always had. That's how he opened this letter up. Most of the Gentiles will gather together unto him, all of the people from different races and nations and different places. Now, can you think of a person, Scott, named Sheol, that was around during the fulfillment of the Moed Mikra? And people quote him all over the planet, and they're typically Gentile.
There's only one, and he created the widest path possible. It's Paul.
Yeah, but that's my thinking, too. I don't see why this is so far out for people to grasp. They do not ask any questions about him. That's kind of funny. That's another barb being thrown out. You know what Sheol means? You know, his word, Sheol, his name, you know what that means?
Doesn't it mean little or something like that?
No, Paulos means he who is lowly and little.
Okay. All right.
That's what he claimed that Yahweh named him after he gave him all this additional training in order to contradict Yahweh. He named him he who is lowly and little, which is kind of funny because people who speak for Yahweh have names like Malachi, you know, which is messenger, or Zachariah, remember Yahweh, or Yashayahu, salvation is from Yahweh, or Eliah,
or
Yahweh is the mighty one. It is,
or Isaac.
I am speaking for God. My name is he who is lowly and little.
Or Isaac, laughter. I mean, he gives people things that either represent what they're doing and what they're about to do, or he, you know, laughter.
Yeah, but Sheol means question him. And so this is kind of a barb here. They do not ask questions of him.
So, let me get this straight. His name is Question Him, He Who Is Little and Lowly.
Yeah. That's a nice sentence. That's how it works out.
Question Him, He Who Is Little and Lowly.
Yeah, sure.
Well, there you go.
Mm-hmm. They do not ask questions, any of them, about him. Terse references to the word they lift up as taunts to ridicule. I've had that happen, by the way, along with elusive saying and derisive words, you know, mocking interpretations is what that means. And you know, I've had people say, I thought, you know, nobody will enter the covenant unless they're circumcised. Yeah, I quote Yahweh saying it. He means it right up to the end. He says, you know, you can't even enter the Pesach doorway if you're not circumcised. And, you know, I've had them say, oh, you're going to stand there and check them out personally, are you, Larry? You know, well, you either believe God or you believe some guy that wrote letters that God already told you about here. Yahweh's being pretty specific about this guy.
Yeah, and he doesn't have to check him. He'll know.
Yeah, there are hard and perplexing questions which needs to be asked of him. And they should say, woe to the one who claims to be great and increases his offspring, neither of which really apply to him. For how long will they make pledges based upon his significance? Now, can you think of any pledges that might go on? Because I knew exactly what this meant. Although there could be no tithing, you know, the tithe was always food or wool or wood. It had to come from a farm, and it was put in Yahweh's storehouse, and it was for the poor to help them. And yet I see pledges made to churches in the form of tithing. Of course, they claim that the Torah is dead, but they still have their tithes somehow or another. Very strange.
Well, yeah, you got to pay for everything somehow.
Mm-hmm. But they make pledges in those institutions, don't they, based on money. And he says, and he loads himself down with thick mud. You know, and Yahweh talks about religion and basically it's being just mud. You know, it's just weighing you down. The religious notions of faith and grace and running a race and constant prayer. He was in constant prayer. You know, he was like a religious boob, cubed, really. But he's just loaded down with mud. And so Yahweh says, why not quickly? For a short period of time, rise up and take a stand. And those of you who are bitten and are making payments to him, wake up from your stupor, moving away from fear of him, because you will be considered plunder. Okay, I'm going to pick up where we left off, and I want to repeat this last statement. And then these are Yahweh's words. You know, we're talking about somebody who somehow significantly made a wide, broad path. Remember, Yahusha said, you know, there's this narrow path few people find, but this guy's creating this wide swath that Gentiles mainly fall into, is what it says. It says, why not quickly for a short period of time rise up and take a stand? That's qualm. And those of you who are bitten and are making payments to him, wake up from your stupor, moving away in fear of him, because you will be considered plunder and victimized. Now, there you go. You know, I know people that make payments to their little circus, their little religious institution with their preacher up front. Matter of fact, he takes the money. He uses it himself. Can you imagine taking money to share Yahweh's words? That was one of the things that really woke me up from church. I thought, how could anybody be sharing honesty and truth with somebody and charge them money for it, and that be a godly situation?
Oh, well, it's one of the it's one of the big reasons why you know, Craig doesn't push things on the show. He doesn't want to. He told me when we first started, he's not going to try and sell the show because it's not something that he felt comfortable doing. And after learning more and more, it makes total sense. Why would you want to do that?
Well, you wouldn't do it, and that's why all the hours and hours, and I mean hundreds or thousands of hours that have gone into Dead Sea Scroll translations are available at yadayahweh.com or introductiontogod.com, but they're free. They're always free. There's no donation, but.
And it's why Richard's doesn't charge for his podcast. You know,
Richard McCord. Yeah, same
he doesn't.
Thing.
Yeah, a lot of stuff.
There's no donation button there either.
Yeah, and there's never going to be. So, yeah.
Yeah, right. All this is free. You know, I sell engines for a living. That's what I do. I have a national company, and we buy and sell engines and ship them all over the country. You know, I do this on my own time. I'm not paid to do this. I wouldn't expect to be paid to do this. And so all this this time and effort get Yahweh's words out and to try to get people to think and seriously consider his words is just because we like sharing his words.
I
love sharing his words. I really do.
I love it, too. And I think I'm the only one that gets paid to do this.
Well, yeah, but you have to be in the studio, so that's another issue.
Yeah, well,
I think that has to happen. You have to be a paid person to do it, or you couldn't be running the studio board.
Yep, so. And I took
you're certainly not getting anything additional for getting Yahweh's words out.
No, well,
that
actually,
where you're at.
Actually, though, you're wrong again. I'm getting a lot extra. If I wouldn't have been the one that took the show that day. The first day that he started, I wouldn't know any of this, and I would be a lot less.
Okay, now that's another issue, and you know what? I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm just going to ask you: at what point in time, from listening to Yahweh's words, did you come around and say, "Wow, this is real"? Because I understand you were agnostic.
I am agnostic. Things made sense really quick. The way Craig went about it, or Yada went about it, he asked me a few simple questions. He asked me what my perception of God was, and I told him, I don't think my idea was that I don't think he cares about what I do from day to day. I don't think somebody that creates a universe, you know, really cares what one person does. And, you know, I told him I don't think he sends people to, you know, to hell that don't believe in him, and things like that. And he's like, and then he told me, do you know that he has a name? And, you know, I'll admit, when he first told me that, I was like, all right, come on, let's hear this crazy crackpot idea. But, you know, and right away, from the first time we ever talked, I became interested. I wanted to know more. I wanted to know more. So it was pretty much right away, just based on how our first few conversations went. And I was pretty lucky as a kid. My dad was a Lutheran. Or is a Lutheran, but he wasn't super. He didn't push religion super hard. So when I started growing up and I got to an age where I could question it, he didn't tell me, "Oh, you can't do that." He let me find my own way.
Okay, we're back here at Chattering Mist. Now, Scott, you said you didn't believe that Yahweh was that interested in your day to day, the minutia of your day to day life, or the minutia of my day to day life.
Well,
and you didn't. Particularly respect a God that said, love me or I'll send you to hell. Now, since you've come to understand Yahweh and what it is he's really saying through the study of extant words, certainly listening to them every day or 5 days a week, what have you determined? Are you on the same page with Yahweh there, or do you think he might be different than that?
Well, he fits into everything that I thought God would be. I mean, he really does. And I mean, if you're somebody that thinks that he cares about your day-to-day minutia, you got a pretty huge ego on you. I mean, you're saying that somebody that created galaxies and created life and has endless answers, if you think that he cares that you didn't, you know, pray to him before you went to bed, that's a pretty big ego on you. I mean, that says a lot about you. And for me, I just never thought that. And I've always looked at, you know, growing up, he never, when he was in the Garden of Eden, as it was called when I was, when I first heard about it, he never made Adam pray. He never made Adam bow from him. And the only time that Adam ever hid from God was when he did the one thing that God told him not to do. And that's the only time that he ever hid. And does that sound like somebody that you should be fearful of? I mean, that sounds like me when I with my dad, you know, with my father as a kid. The only time that I ever didn't want to be around my dad was when I knew I was in trouble. And so everything that I've heard, and I tell everybody that I'm still trying to learn and get more on the path and things like that.
I mean, we're all, you know, but it's the path. It isn't Scott. It isn't God. It isn't Larry. It's not the personal minutia in our life that really makes us part of the family. It's the love of the name and the path. That's what Yahweh says. And since he's the one that blazed the path, since he's the one that fulfilled the Moed Mikra and is going to fulfill the last three fall Mikra, personally, he'll fulfill those, then why in the world? What's it got to do with the minutia in my life? I mean, I just choose to have a relationship with him. And after all, isn't it really the wine of life is relationships? That's what this whole thing's about. It's knowing Yahweh in a relational way.
Well, it is that. You do want a relationship. And then with knowing that, think about the relationships that you have in your day-to-day life now. Would you want your wife, would you want her calling you like every 5 minutes and just giving you an update on what she's doing? Or is it okay if she goes off and does her own stuff and then you guys...
Or before she goes out to town center tonight while I'm here on the radio, that she comes in and gets on her knees and prostrates herself and mercies and begs that she can go and
or,
go get a pair of shades or whatever it is she's doing.
Or,
you know.
Or even, just giving you a call. Like, every time she thinks about you, she just decides to give you a call. Like, that would get, like, initially you might be like, oh, that's really sweet. But eventually you're going to get like, okay, just stop. You think about me a thousand times
in
a day.
13 years into this marriage, I've never had that. I couldn't take it if that were the case, by the way.
But that's just it. It's every relationship. Relationships are, you know, there's no better feeling than when all week long you go about your life and then you think you get done with work on a Friday, we'll say Friday, and you get to go home. And then you get to be with the people that you care about. And that's what he set up here. He's like, go do your thing. And then on this one set-apart day, come, you know, come hang out with me. Let's talk. Let's go over some stuff together. And that's pretty cool. That's a relationship. That's what a relationship is.
Right. He calls them his words, and he wants us to listen. And I'm going to go back to these words. And right now we're at Chabakuk 2.8, chapter 2, verse 8. And here's what he says. Because you have plundered, stealing the possessions of so many Gentiles, they shall loot and victimize all of the remaining nations by means of blood of humankind and also through violent and cruel destructive forces terrorizing the land and Yah's city and all those living in her. Yah's city is what? That's Jerusalem, the place from which all salvation flows. And Paul mercilessly attacks the Jews throughout his letters, even though he claimed to be from the tribe of Benjamin. By the way, Benjamin is described as a wolf who's ripping and tearing. And, of course, Yahusha warned us about the wolf in sheep's clothing that was so clever he could even fool those in the inner sanctum, the disciples. And he almost did, by the way, you know. But the anti-Semitism that's grown out of the Christian church is astounding. You know, the Romans actually looted all of Israel. And they ended up doing what? They ended up, destroying the storehouse. They salted all of Israel. And to this day, aren't we controlling even whether... the Yehudi can, you know, build homes in their own land? Isn't that happening to this day? I mean, where do we micromanage any place like that other than Israel? You know, there is no other place. And what he says here is, woe to the one who is cut off, that means dead, cut off from the relationship, from the covenant, while wickedly soliciting his ill-gotten gain in relation to him setting his house and temple, so a house and a temple, we're talking about a religion, in association with the heights of heaven, so as to spare the acquired property and possessions from the paws of his fellow countrymen. So, you know, his whole thing was about what he could get, what he could get, what he could get, what he could get. And it's kind of interesting because if we look at P46, P46 is the oldest writings on the planet from Paul. And since we're talking about ill-gotten gain and money that he gets to rake in 2 Corinthians 11:7, Paul says, I committed a sin in humbling myself because I preached the gospel of God to you without charge. Now, that would be funny. It isn't gospel. It's Torah, by the way. Can you imagine having to pay a guy like this for a stream of verbal diarrhea that's spewed out your way by this guy?
No.
In Corinthians 11:8, you know, he says very clearly, and you talk about a delusional wannabe here. He says, I robbed other churches taking wages to serve you. Wow. Where in Yahweh's words does it say anybody sharing his words is supposed to be taking money anyway?
I don't think it does. But no.
And then just to go a little further, in Matanyahu over here, he says, do not call anyone on earth father, for you have one father, and he is in heaven. Now in 1 Corinthians 4:16, Paulos over here, he who is lowly a little, I became your father in Yahusha Messiah through the gospel. I encourage you then to be imitators of me. Let me ask you something, and anybody listening, would you really encourage people to be imitators of you? I wouldn't.
No way. I know me.
What do I have to do with anything? What does Paulos have to do? Matter of fact, what did Matanyahu have anything to do with it?
Yeah, no way. I know me. I know my flaws. I know what I don't do well. And
well, this is such a big deal because Yahusha, when they came to him and said, how should we be? He didn't say imitate me. He always pointed to the Father, right? Because he's a diminished part of the Father. He says, follow his instructions. What are his instructions? And his instructions were the Moed Mikra.
Which are
the
found
law of the name.
Which are found where?
In the Torah.
There you go. So,
yeah, see, there was no New Testament. You know, that delusion came about a couple hundred years after Yahusha was sacrificed, crucified. And I want to read Hosea to you, too, 8.4, while I'm on this subject. They have, and I mentioned this one yesterday, but I'm just going to read it. Hosea 8:4. They have set up kings, but not by me. They have made princes, I knew not, of their silver and gold. They made them idols, that they may be cut off. Romans 13:1. Now, this is Paulos, who speaks for God. He says, let every being in subjection, be in subjection to the government authorities, for there is no authority except for Elohim, and the authorities that exist are appointed by Elohim. Whoa! So he just said the exact opposite, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Now, I want anybody out there that really stands there for Paul to explain that one. Then he says, woe to the one who is cut off for coveting while wickedly soliciting ill-gotten gain in relation to him in his house and temple in association with the heights of heaven, so as to spare the acquired property and possessions from the paws of his fellow countrymen. In other words, you know, he's all about taking from his fellow countrymen, and nobody has done more harm to the Yehudi than Paulos, who said, you know, they were worthless people. Here he was, a Jew himself, claimed to be from the tribe that's called the Wolf, but you know, it was the Romans, and Paulos is a Roman name, by the way, that went out and destroyed Israel. They tore the temple down. They took the material of the temple and built the Colosseum with it and made the Yehudi slaves to build it. Wow. I don't know how much more has to be said about Paulos, but we're talking about one man here, and you can come to your own conclusions as to who it is. Continuing in Habakkuk here, or Shavuot, you have deliberately decided upon and conspired at the advice of another to promote a shameful plot to confuse those who approach your house. That's a religion. Now, I don't know how many religions that are primarily non-Jewish or Gentile nations that are a wide swath and have confused many Gentiles from all over the world other than one, and that would be Christianity, and that is the foundation. Paul's letters are the foundation for that house. Ruining and reducing by cutting off so many people from different races and places, and in the process, losing your own soul. Okay, so we're not talking about Sheol. Again, we're talking about a person, he, that loses his soul for doing what he's done here. This is the guy who's puffed up and proud, doesn't particularly care for Jews. I think he got angry when he got kicked out of rabbi school is what I think. Woe to the one who provides causes and allows his neighbors, companions, or countrymen to drink, thereby associating them with venomous wrath, but also making them drunk for the purposes of observing their genitals. So perhaps we could say Sheol, this person that was has created this broad path, is not really the prophet or the apostle of the Gentiles. Maybe we should say genitals, because obviously he enjoyed his countrymen's genitals, or Yahweh wouldn't have said that. You will get your fill of shame and infamy instead of honor and glory. In addition, you also show yourself unacceptable going round about over your lack of circumcision. Yeah, Paul even says people that should be that were circumcised, he wished that they would be castrated. That's in P46 also. And since that's extant writing of Paul, I'm assuming that's what he said. And upon you is this binding cup of Yahweh's right hand. Therefore, public humiliation and indignity will be your reward and your status. Wow. What we see here is Pauline doctrine is pure poison. And it's venom from the most vile of serpents. He calls it venomous. And more indicting still, I mean, you got to understand, Paul, who never knew the love of a woman, he said it would be better to never marry a woman. You know that. Better to never marry. Well, Paul's... Paul's concepts there are a little weird, because Yahweh bases his entire covenant on a family. It's a family covenant. That takes a man and a woman, last time I checked. But apparently he enjoyed men's company a little more than he did women's, and I think that's why he writes about all those holy kisses he gives to young Timmy and Timothy.
Might also explain some of the problems that they have going on in their system right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, certainly. Yeah, that too. And I think you'll find a lot of that hidden in the upper echelons of that religion. You certainly will. But what we have to do, though, is we have to consider Yahweh's words. He doesn't ask a lot out of me and you. He knows we're human. We're going to stub our toe pretty much daily. Certainly the guy he loved the most in life of all time, said he did, was King David, real name Dode.
Does he say
much
that?
Loved. He stubbed his toe. He had 700 wives. I mean, this guy was he was all out.
Does he say that we have to be perfect, or does he say that he'll make us perfect?
He says he makes us perfect because we've decided to interact with him in a relational sense. Mm-hmm. But this is some kind of prophecy, isn't it, for this to be a big accident? He names him by name. He describes him proud and puffed up. You know,
he tells you his plan. He tells you exactly what he's going to do. But you put these in
and
your
lack
letters.
Lack of circumcision is part of that plan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's part of the plan. Don't have to be circumcised.
No, it's a wide path. You just have to believe, man. He says, yeah, whatever. I'm here.
Yeah. And believe in grace. Believe in the gratia. You know, it's been a pleasure, Scott. I enjoyed doing this with you, and Monday, Yada will be back. Thank you.